Okay, I'm going to try standing here, but not too close to the speaker so that it pops. Good morning. Will you join me for a moment of prayer? Loving God, God of all creatures, please bless the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts that they may be acceptable to you. Amen. Years ago, I read an article about an aquarium that was having problems with disappearing starfish. There were every night, more or less, they would disappear. And the workers would come in the next morning and they would notice that the starfish tank, which was open, it was open so that children could touch, you know, it was like an open exhibit. But starfish can't jump out. And so they would notice there were one or two missing. And they would check, they would look for these starfish. They would check under all the crevices. They could not figure out where they were going. And so after this went on for several weeks or months, they decided to install a camera overnight. And they set up the camera, and the first night, nothing. The second night, nothing. The third night, nothing. But on the fourth night, they discovered that an octopus, four tanks over, was working its way out of a very small hole in its tank at the top. It would sort of ooze its way across the top of the other fish tanks to the starfish tank, eat a few, and then go all the way back and get back inside of its cage before the workers came in the next morning. Animals are a lot smarter than we give them credit for sometimes. And as I was thinking about what I wanted to talk with you about this morning, I considered the different animal stories in the Bible. And there are a lot of really great animal stories in the Bible and a lot of really great animals. And I thought about which one I would like to talk about. And so I decided to pick the biggest, the baddest, the most ferocious, the Leviathan. The mythical sea creature that we heard described today, larger than life, that has appeared in almost every culture's mythology since the beginning of time, the Leviathan. And it comes in the story of Job. We're all familiar with Job. There's this bet between God and Satan, the advocate, the adversary, and there's this argument and this little bet over whether or not Job, who has everything and also who has great faith, if he suddenly lost everything, would he still have faith? That is the question on the table. And so Job loses everything to see if he still has faith. And he loses everything. And his life goes from being really wonderful to being really terrible overnight. And his friends, who aren't great friends, come to visit him, and they have this argument. And the friends keep saying, well, if everything in your life suddenly went bad, you must have done something to anger God. And he argues back and says, no, I don't believe it. If God really does this, then God is an unjust God. And he demands justification. He demands an answer. And they argue back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, until the very end, where God answers, it says, out of the whirlwind. Out of the whirlwind, but Job gets a response. Job gets an answer. Not the one he expects, but he does get a response. And there's this wonderful scene with this whirlwind and God's voice coming out of the whirlwind to answer these charges. So, years ago I had a friend who lived in Portland, Oregon, and she told me a story about how one evening, way in the wee hours, 2 o'clock in the morning, after everybody had gone to bed and had been asleep for some time, she heard a rustling that woke her up in the middle of the night. A rustling coming from her closet. And nobody wants to have to deal with a rustling, skittering sound in their closet in the middle of the night. But she had a plan. She was prepared. She rolled over, woke up her husband, and expected him to deal with it. And she said, Tom, wake up, wake up, wake up, there's something in the closet. And Tom apparently went from a dead sleep to a ninja pose with a shoe in his hand in 1 second flat and said, what is it? And she said, there's something in the closet. I think it might be a mouse. And he said, is that a hole? And he went back to sleep. So then she had to go to plan B. And what she did was she felt around the side of her bed until she found a sweatshirt or something she remembered leaving there. And she crept up to the closet with the sweatshirt, and she crept up as quietly as she could until she was very close to the sound of the skittering. And she threw the sweatshirt over it, gathered the whole thing up, and ran through her house to her patio, opened the door, and threw the whole thing out on her patio deck. And in the darkness on this patio deck, which was on the second story of her house, this little creature skittered out from underneath the sweatshirt and tore across the patio over the edge. Fearless in the dark, fearless. And as it disappeared over the edge in the darkness, she realized to her horror that it was not in fact a mouse, it was her 5-year-old son's pet hamster, Mr. Jenkins. And so she ran down the stairs, dug through the leaves at the bottom, underneath the deck, and it took her a while, but she did find a very frightened, a very stunned Mr. Jenkins, and she prayed, and she put him back in his cage and prayed that he would make it through the night, and that her son would not find out what had happened. Mr. Jenkins was a little shell-shocked for a couple of days, but he rallied and he survived, and he went on to live a very long and happy hamster life of about another 18 months. And her son never found out. But what can we learn from Mr. Jenkins about being fearless in the dark? When we are caught off guard, we can still run forth into the darkness, and know that we're going to be okay and survive. See, we can learn a lot from the animals, and that is how God answers Job, as he starts talking about the animals and all of the things that Job doesn't know about these animals. And again, he lifts up their gifts and says they don't even have wisdom and understanding, and yet they still have gifts that they contribute to this world. Who are you to think that you have the ability to understand all of this and everything that I do and everything that happens in this world? And he lifts up again and again the ostrich, the horse, the eagle, the wolf, all of these different animals and all of the gifts that they bring and everything that we can learn from them. There was a point years ago when we got chickens. We've had them for 3-4 years now. And they were raised inside because we didn't have a place to raise them other than in the living room. We got them as 2 days old. We kept them in a box because that's where the heater was, and outside they would have been eaten. And so we raised them until they were about 12 weeks old, and then we put them outside in a coop. The problem was, because of that, to this day they believe that they are house chickens. They believe that they are domestic chickens. And they have been trying to get back inside ever since. And in fact, if you leave the back door open and the chickens are out, and you, within a few minutes, you will come into the kitchen and you will find chickens underneath the table pecking around, and sometimes on the table pecking around, and you have to shoo them back out again. So we learned to start keeping the door closed. And then we discovered that they would come to the front door and we would hear them pecking around on the front porch. But you could tell it was a chicken, so we weren't about to open the door. So they stopped doing that. And then at a certain point we heard them outside the bedroom. After a couple of weeks, we heard them outside the bedroom window. They would kind of get up in the bushes and the flower pots to get a little higher, and they would sort of peep and chirp until you would come look out the window. But we did not open the window for them and let them into the bedroom. And then one day I was sitting in the living room and I heard a rapping at the back door. And anybody who knows anything about this house knows that you come around to the back if you know us, you come around to the back. And so I heard a rapping on the glass. And when I opened the door, there was a chicken there. And what she had discovered, this is little Penelope, our bantam hen, she had discovered there's a screen door with no screen in it. And she could hop up on that little lip of the wooden screen, reach the glass, rap on the glass with her beak, and sound exactly like a human being. And people have told me that, and this is true, I've seen this, in a flock, chickens are not very bright, but individually they are quite intelligent. And someone once said they are descended from raptors. Did you know this? Chickens are descended from raptors? And I was suddenly, as I'm watching Penelope, as she hopped past me, thank you for opening the door, and went into the kitchen, I remember that scene from Jurassic Park with the raptors, right, where the man says that the female that's leading the pack of raptors has been testing the defenses in the perimeter of their enclosure, but never testing any place twice. They were systematically looking for weaknesses. And I thought about how the chickens tried the back door, then tried the front door, right? Then tried the window, and then learned how to act like a human being to be able to get into the house. That shows persistence and ingenuity, and they were able to get what they needed. They were able to get what they wanted. What can we learn from from the animals, how little we understand about them and how little we understand about ourselves. A great thinker whose name eludes me right now says that human beings are the only animal on the planet that deliberately destroy their own habitat. Human beings are the only animals on the planet that kill for pleasure, not for need. Human beings are the only animals on the planet that can't find their way home, that can get lost and can't find their way home. We are a peculiar bunch. And when God answers Job out of the whirlwind, he lifts up all of the things that animals can do that people can't. All of the gifts that animals bring that people forget that they have. And again, he says, who are you to think that you have so much understanding that you could understand me? So we have a neighbor. They moved to New York some time ago, but we had a neighbor that had two pets. They had an itty-bitty tiny little cockapoo that was like this big, named Giselle, a fluffy little thing. And then they had Archie the cat, and Archie was like a bowling ball, like a basketball. He was orange and white, and his middle was around this big, with little legs sticking out the sides. He was huge. He was just the biggest, fattest, rolliest, poliest cat you've ever seen in your life. And they used to invite me over when they were out of town to walk the dog and feed the cat. And I would go in there, and I thought they had kind of a strange system for feeding the cat. You know, if you're going on vacation for a while, and you know, you ask someone to come over every few days to check on the animals, but you don't want them to starve or anything. So they had kind of a strange system. When I would go into the kitchen, I would find bowls of water on the floor and, you know, like a big pile of food on the floor that the animals could just eat as they felt like it. It was a little weird, but that's what they did. Well, at a certain point, after some time, I ran into them again, and I saw them, and Archie had slimmed down. Archie had gotten a lot slimmer. He was sleek. He looked like a healthy cat again. And I said, wow, did you put Archie on a diet? And he says, yeah, I did. I put him on the screw-top diet, he says. I put Archie on the screw-top diet. And I'd never heard of this diet before. And he said, months ago, I walked into the kitchen and I discovered the cat and the dog working together. They had like a Tupperware food container that was about this high and had like one of those pop tops on it. And he walked into the kitchen and discovered the dog would go on one side of it and brace himself. The cat would go around the other side and stand up on his back feet and push. And it would flip that thing over, land on its lid, the lid would pop off, and it would leave a pile of food in the middle of the floor that they would then help themselves to. So what he did was he got a different container that had a screw top so they could knock it over all they wanted but not get into it, and Archie started slimming down. Dogs and cats working together. It happens. What can we learn from animals if dogs and cats can find a way to work together so that everybody has enough to eat? Why can't we? We think we understand so much, and yet we have been unable to solve these problems in our own world. But if dogs and cats can work together to figure this out, we should be able to as well. So the Leviathan, this ferocious beast that's described as having a heart of stone, incredible armor so that nothing can get in, a warring spirit so that any battle you fight with it, you will automatically lose, a mouth that breathes fire and has teeth like spears. Nothing good ever comes out of that mouth. The only thing that comes out of that mouth is something that hurts, something that harms. And as you listen to this story about the Leviathan, I start to wonder, this Leviathan that nothing gets into its armor, that has a warring spirit, that everything that comes out of its mouth is harmful, and it has a heart of stone. Are we talking about the mythical beast? Or are we talking about people that we know in our very own lives? Are we talking about ourselves when we're at our worst, when we're frightened, when we're lonely, when we're hungry, when we're tired. And God tells to Job, this is this beast, and I'm the only one. I'm the only one that can tame it. And as we know, when we tame animals, we can never tame animals by force. We can only tame them by trusting, building that trust, being gentle, being there to meet their needs. And God says, I was able to tame the Leviathan. Can you? I was able to get the Leviathan, put it on a little leash, and play with it so that it would speak gentle words to me and let me pet it. If even the Leviathan, with its heart of stone and its javelin teeth and its dragon breath and its impenetrable armor could allow itself to trust, could allow itself to be gentle, could allow itself to speak soft words and be led, why can't we? So, my daughter Faye has a parakeet. It was her 8th birthday present, her parakeet Buddy. And Buddy has its wings trimmed, but has learned to fly anyway. It's a very ingenious bird. And at one point, right after I'd put the girls to bed, Buddy came out of his cage. I let him out, and he started flying around, and he flew into their bathroom, where they had left the toilet open. Yes, yes, they had left the toilet open, and they had not flushed. I know, it's one of those sermons. So the toilet was open, and the bird, I heard this splash, and I ran in there, and I'm looking in this toilet, and there's a bird up to his neck. And there was a moment, I haven't told my children this, there was a moment where I considered just flushing it. Yeah, just flush it, problem solved. And he was chirping, he has this alarm chirp, right? Chirp, 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 chirp. It just went on. So they knew something was up. And as I looked at this bird, his whole life flashed before my eyes. And all it was dollar signs. How much I'd paid for the bird, for the cage, for the food, for the vet bills. And I thought, no, I don't want to invest all that money again. So I took the plunge, reached in, and I pulled him out. And he did not smell very good. And he was still chirping. So I ran into the sink, and I tried splashing some water on him, you know, to kind of wash him off. He still smelled bad. So I had to fill the sink, and I had him up to his neck, and I'm sloshing him around, right? And he's chirp, 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 and the kids are in the room. What's happening to Buddy? Is Buddy okay? Buddy sounds scared. What are you doing to Buddy? And I'm like, shut up. I'm trying to deal with this. And so I'm sloshing him around. It still didn't work. So I ended up just holding him under the faucet and letting the water run gently, but letting the water run until finally after 4 washings, he stopped smelling bad. Well, now he's soggy, right? He is drenched. He's completely soggy. So I towel him off, still chirping. He hasn't stopped. He hasn't broken rhythm, not once. And so I'm worried this bird now, he's wet and he's cold. What to do next? So I hold him in front of the heater, which, you know, it's a wall heater that blasts out. And I hold him, oh, is that or the hair dryer? I mean, seriously, people. So I held him in front of the heater and let the hot air kind of blow dry him until he was damp but not soggy anymore. Still chirping. And at that point, I figured he wasn't dead. He wasn't dirty anymore. He wasn't wet and he wasn't cold. So I put him back in his cage. And he spent the next 3 hours preening every feather to put it back into place. And every once in a while, he would stop and he would glare at me. And he'd go, and then he'd start preening again until he was all done. And then he was fluffy. He was a big, fluffy, poofy ball of hate. He was just, you know, you could see this poofy, fluffy, turquoise feathers surrounding one beady little eye that would just glare at me every time I went past the cage. And he didn't talk to me for 2 days. Every time I went past the cage, he would just give a big sigh and glare at me. But on the 3rd day, I put my finger in the cage, and he did not try to bite it off. And he hopped on my finger, and we were friends again. Now this bird, through no fault of his entire world fell apart. Everything bad that could happen to him happened to him. And I was the one that did it. But if Buddy could learn to forgive, if octopuses can figure octopi, could figure out how to escape their cages, if hamsters can learn, these tiny little helpless rodents can learn to be fearless in the dark, if chickens, bird brains can learn to be ingenious and persistent, if dogs and cats can learn to work together, and if very put upon soiled parakeets can learn to forgive, why can't we? Can I get an amen to that?
Amen.
Amen.